Okay, I think it's time to begin tonight. 7:01. Good evening. I'm glad to see you tonight. I'm glad you're here, despite of the cold weather. It's been a little cold, but it's getting better, looks like. Or will get better. We'll see what happens. Yes, but very good. Tonight we're going to continue. We have two more sessions, maybe today and Sunday, and just wrapping it up on parenting. And what I want to do tonight is just go over some examples we have in the Bible. Okay, and I'm going to focus tonight on some. The topic should be parental mistakes. That should be the topic. So I'm just going to go over some examples of parents who, I don't want to call them they failed, but there's an element of disappointment in their lives. Sometimes the parents were involved, sometimes they weren't. But most of the examples we're going to see, the parents had an element of involvement in what happened. Okay? Of course, we know that there's free will, and still is the choice of the children, but the whole family as a whole suffered. Okay? One way or another. That's the point. Okay? For example, I'm going to start with Adam and Eve, okay? But before we begin this list of examples, so we have the first example, the first family, okay? So we have Adam and Eve, and they have two sons, Cain and Abel, okay? And somewhere along the road, the Bible presents them to us as offering a sacrifice, okay, unto the Lord, and then the Lord was pleased with Abel's offering, but was displeased with Cain's offering, okay? And we can go further into discussing the reasons why, but we're not going to stop there. So then Caleb becomes, what will be the word, jealous or angry against Abel because of what happened. So he asks them to come out into the field, and when they're by themselves, he kills them, okay? Now, I wouldn't think that was the way Adam and Eve would wish for things to go, to happen in their family. So there's an element of failure in that family, okay, of discouragement. Something happened that really I don't think Adam and Eve wished that had happened to Abel, okay? So right from the beginning, right from the start, we see that there's issues in every family. In fact, scholars today, they say that families are dysfunctional in one way or another, okay? There's something that still needs to be worked on. There's something lacking in families. So we see from the human perspective that there's no perfect parents, okay? There are no perfect family, but this helps us not to take for granted the work that parenting takes. Okay, not to take it for granted. We need to work on parenting. Make sure we do things. Make an effort to do things correctly. Okay, now the second example. Anything on Adam and Eve that you would like to mention? Everything clear? All right, very good. Okay, the second example is right there. I'm gonna move on some examples fast. Some examples I'm gonna dwell more. But for example, right there in Genesis 9, if you want to go with me to Genesis 9, or I'm going to read it out loud. But in Genesis 9, we have a small account of what happened after the flood with Noah and one of his three children, okay? Sem, Cam, and Japheth. Okay, notice Genesis 9, verse 18 and following. Now the sons of Noah who went out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan, okay? So he's making this point. Ham was the father of Canaan. These three were the sons of Noah, and from these the whole earth was populated. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk and became uncovered in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told this to his brothers outside. Okay, so he did something he shouldn't have done. Okay, see his father Noah when he was naked. Okay, now Verse 23, but Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both of their shoulders, and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned away, and they did not see their father's nakedness. So Noah woke from his wine and knew that his younger son had done what he had done to him. And then notice what happened. There's a rebuke to his son for what he had done from his father. It's a mistake he made. Okay, something he shouldn't have done, but then now Noah is gonna rebuke him. And in fact, he's gonna give him a strong rebuke. Verse 25, then he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, he shall be to his brethren." Verse 26, and he said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and may he dwell in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be his servant." Okay, so we see here's a rebuke it goes to Canaan, but it's to Ham and his descendants, which are going to be the Canaanites. Okay, so here's another example. Noah, right off the ark, okay, and there's something that happened with his family, one of his sons, okay, doing what he shouldn't have done. And there's more examples here in the book of Genesis, but something that really caught my attention that I want to share with you. Have you thought about David, King David? You know, King David had several sons, okay? Had several multiple sons. One of them, the most famous we know, of course, is whom? Solomon, correct, okay? And there's another one who is also famous in the book of, let me make sure I have it right. Let's see, 2 Samuel. Which is his other son who rebelled against him?
Absalom.
That's another famous son, okay? So, and there's a third son mentioned. Well, there's several sons mentioned, but I want to use these three as examples. Solomon, Absalom, and there's still another one that I'll mention at the end. But notice, for instance, let me see, which one should I start with? Let's go with Absalom. 2 Samuel, chapter 13. And I think this is going to be very important for us today, because remember, I told you about different parenting styles. We can clearly see a parenting style here with Absalom and David. Okay, we'll figure it out at the end when we finish this brief reading of 2 Samuel. But in 2 Samuel chapter 13, we see the story, of course, of Amnon and Tamar, two more children of David. Amnon and Tamar. Okay, now I'm in chapter 13. And then notice, chapter 13, verse 2, Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar and so on. And notice, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her, because that was his sister. Okay, but then there was this uncle of Amnon, and he was a very crafty man. Notice, when something is improper to do, and then you add to that a very crafty man, something bad is going to happen. Okay? Because this crafty man gave advice to Absalom as to what to do with the desire, the forbidden desire he had towards his sister. So we know the rest of the story. Amnon forced his sister Tamar, okay? And then brought disgrace to Tamar. But then Absalom, he was really upset at what happened. But notice something very interesting concerning David. In verse 21, on chapter 13, notice to this. But then King David heard of these things and was very angry, okay? The Bible doesn't tell us anything further about what happened, okay, with Amnon, with Amnon and Tamar and so on regarding David taking action or pronouncing himself about it, only that he was angry. Verse 22, and Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. Okay, so Absalom kept quiet. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. Okay, verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. Notice, after 2 full years, so we have this account of Amnon forcing his sister Tamar. Okay, we see these children of David mingled in this situation. But then the Bible doesn't give us any details about 2 years. For 2 full years, then Absalom comes back into the picture. So we don't know if David knew that Absalom hated Amnon or anything. But we see 2 years afterwards, okay? And then we see that the Absalom begins to plot against his brother, Amnon. Okay, he begins to plot. And he asks for permission to his father David to have a banquet and invite him the king. And then, but the king said, I won't go. I will let your brothers and sisters, your brothers go. So he makes this banquet and he's making sure his brother Amnon attends the banquet because Absalom wants to kill him. Okay? So that's just what happened. All the children come, and then Absalom, verse 28, Absalom commanded his servant, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. Okay? So they did so. They killed Amnon at the feast. And then the word comes to David that all of his children died by the hand of Absalom. Okay? And then he's really turned out. So he's really sad because someone told him that everybody was dead except for Absalom. Verse 31. So the king arose and tore his garments and laid them on the ground. And all his servants stood with their clothes torn. Okay? Notice, then Jonadab, the son of Shimea, David's brother, answered and said, notice to this, this was a plot in which the uncle, the same one who advised Absalom to this plot against, the one who advised Amnon to plot against Tamar is the same one who is involved here as well. And then notice what he says. He's involved because, notice, I'll tell you why. Verse 32. Then Jonadab, the son of Shimei, the same one that we read earlier, he told David, let not my lord suppose they have killed all the young men, the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. Notice his words. Okay? Only Amnon is dead. For by the commandment of Absalom, this has been determined from the day he forced his sister Tamar. 33. Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for only Absalom is dead. He's saying, don't worry, don't think that everybody is dead. It's okay, it's only one. It's only one, but that's enough. Because verse 37 says that David mourned for his son every day. See these deceiving words? He said, don't worry, he didn't kill everybody, he just only killed one. All right, that's right. Only one, that's enough for me. Just one is enough for me to be mourning. Okay, and then notice verse 38, and here's where I want to go. I'm in 2 Samuel 13:38. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and was there for how long? For 3 years. Okay, and King David longed to go to Absalom. Many fathers today long to see their children. In fact, we all, or I would say most fathers, long to see their children. But David, for 3 years, he was satisfied only with longing because he didn't go see him for 3 years. So you see, you get the point? This is an uninvolved parent on the life of his son Absalom. Okay, why is this significant? Because things from Absalom are only going to get from bad to worse, until he faces his death. So it is important to notice that David, in a way, was not involved in the life of Absalom. Did not know that Absalom had this hatred in his heart. Did not know that his son Absalom had plotted against one of his brothers. Did not know what was going on in Absalom's mind, in Absalom's heart. Okay? And I'm going to tell you something from a children's perspective. I might speak for myself, but we like for our parents to pay us attention. Okay, children like for their parents to pay them attention, to be involved in their life, to watch a movie with them, okay? Even if it's a cartoon or something is not appealing to us. I like action movies or whatever. But so you have to sit with them watching a cartoon. That's okay. They just want you to be there. Okay? They want the attention. They want the time. They want to tell you about the schoolwork. They want to tell you what they painted or some really small things when they're growing up. Okay? And that keeps on growing. It's different, but they want the attention. So we see Absalom deprived of that attention from his father. Okay? So we see David was uninvolved. And then before we finish, let me see. When there was a plot from Joab, you know, Absalom is away, exiled. Then Joab intercedes. He's the captain of the army. And then he convinces David to let Absalom come back to Jerusalem. Okay, he's living in a faraway land. Okay, but then notice this. I'm in 2 Samuel 14, verse 24. Absalom came back, and the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. Okay, 3 years away, I long for him. He's back, but I don't want to see him. Okay, I don't want to see him. And then notice verse 28. And Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but what? I'm going to have to bring some candy and give Snicker to whoever is following along the reading. Okay? And I know you are. But notice, but did not see his face, but did not see the king's face for 2 years. After being exiled for 3 years, he comes to Jerusalem, and David doesn't want to see him for 2 years. Isn't this incredible? Am I explaining myself? On this point, I hope I'm not confusing you. But we see at least 5 years David being absent from his son. And I think we don't know the turnout of events. But in chapter 15, we see that Absalom commits treason against his father. Okay? It's not crazy to say that maybe things would have gone different had David spent more time with his son. It's not crazy to say that, okay? It's not crazy. How do we know it's not crazy? Because we can shape the lives of our sons and daughters when we spend time with them. That's it, okay? It has the fact. So we see here an example of David, and I'm going to pick on David tonight. I'm going to use him as example. You know, Romans 15:4 says that the things that happen aforetime we're reading for our learning. So we're learning from David. He left us some good examples, at least, I mean, some good examples for us to learn from. Okay, he made some mistakes, but we can learn from those mistakes. Okay, so we see here an uninvolved parent. And he finally saw Absalom's face, okay, because of his request. Absalom requested it, but then he was forgiven, but then Absalom rebelled against David, and we know the rest of the story, okay? David's men fought against Absalom's army, and Absalom was defeated. And you know the story, he was riding on a mule, and his head got cut up on a tree, and he was hanging from the tree, and then Joab killed him on purpose. When David had expressly said, please do not kill my son. You see, his son rebelled against him. Do you still love him as his son? And if we would turn it around, our parents make mistakes, okay? Just like we as parents make mistakes. But we cannot accept we have been abused by them, except we have been beaten almost to die by them. We should be grateful for our parents, okay? No matter how many mistakes they made, okay? And let me tell you this story. I was in Venezuela it's been probably 10 years ago. And we were doing like a Home Depot, something similar like we did on Sunday night. And then we split in groups of three. And then the purpose was to to talk a little bit in small groups. It was just a small dynamic. But all of the little groups and the group where I was with other three young men, all the topics were centered around a dysfunctional family. Okay, one of them had been abused by his father. The other one, his father abandoned him. The other one, his mother abandoned him or her. And then it opened up my eyes to see how families can get so messed up, so damaged. And you see this group of young men, they don't forget about it. They have sequels of what parents did, and they are sad about it. And that event made me open my eyes, and I told him, you know, your parents made mistakes. You don't have to follow after your parents' mistakes. I know following their example is strong, because that's the best example you have. You see them, they're important for you, and you tend to follow their example, whether it's good or bad. But please do not follow their bad example. You don't have to be like that. Your family doesn't have to be broken like your parents did. Okay? And I'm not lying to say that of that group of young men, I would say probably 90% had similar stories of broken homes. And I say it's enough. We need to preach more on the family. We need to preach more on parenting, on being a mother, on being a husband, on being a wife. It's enough, because it's a weakness. And then when those things come to the church suffers. Of course, society suffers. Okay? And I'm going to be honest. The topic of custody and things like that, and I'm going to tell you this just honest and honest truth. Nothing against anyone, but I haven't been so involved in topics like that until I moved to the States. Okay? And that's just a fact. Okay? I don't need to lie. I'm not making any conclusion, but that's the fact. Okay? Maybe in other countries they deal about it in different ways, but I have not been aware too much or involved until I came here. This is an everyday topic. But anyway, okay, let's look at another example. Okay? So we have David and Absalom. Let's go to the one I wanted to show you. Let's go to 1 Kings.
Raphael?
Yes, ma'am, please.
You were talking about the you know, your parents make mistakes.
Yes.
We should be thankful for the family. One of the things that I think people should be thankful for that have the opportunity to fix those things or to correct those things or to mend, at least to mend those things. You know, like you said, most families, they have dysfunctional family. But if your parents are still alive and you're able to go and have a conversation with them that helps to mend some of those things that happen in a dysfunctional family, then you consider yourself also to be blessed, because there are some who do not have that opportunity. Their parents die. They never get a chance to even confront them or talk to them about whatever issue that their parents did. So that to me also says, if you have an opportunity to fix something dysfunctional in your family, take advantage of that.
Correct.
Because it is not always given to everyone that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of us just kind of let it go, and whatever it happened, I'm mad or whatever. But if we have an opportunity to fix it and go back and mend those things.
Correct. That's an excellent point. Thank you for bringing it up. Yes. And not everything is set in stone in many cases. There's things that can be done, definitely. And if we can do it, let's fix those as much as we can. Thank you. Let me give you another example. In the first book of 1 Kings, we see another son of David, and his name is Adonijah. Okay? 1 Kings chapter 1. Notice in verse 5, you're with me. 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 5. Notice this example. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, okay, saying, I will be king. Okay, same thing as Absalom, okay? And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not rebuked him at any time, saying, why have you done this? Notice this. So we see in the case of Absalom, David was uninvolved, okay? And of course, the disclaimer is, I'm not blaming everything on David, but David was part of it. Okay, but he's not. I'm not saying he's to be guilty for Absalom wanting to be king or rebelling. He has his own choice. Okay, same thing happens here. But notice the Bible mentions there's a responsibility, element of responsibility on the father of Adonijah. Adonijah is exalting himself. You know, at this point, David is old. We're fast forwarding several years, at least probably at least 30 or maybe 40 in the life of King David. And David is old, okay? And then this Adonijah, he exalts himself. He said, well, I'm someone important. This vainglory, this recognition from people, I'm someone important. So because he's important, he then prepares chariots, horsemen, 50 men to go before him. And then, but his father had not rebuked him, okay, at any time by saying, why have you done so? Okay, we don't know why his father, David, had not rebuked him. Doesn't tell you why, just tells us the fact that that is noticed by the inspired writer and by God, that David did not do what he could have done to fix this situation of Adonijah. Okay? So we see that he rebelled, he caused part of the people and the city, okay? And then he claims himself to be, he declares to be the king. And then we know the rest of the story. We see how the prophet Nathan and Bathsheba, they intercede and go talk to David. They say, David, have you named Adonijah your successor as in the throne? And he said, no, I haven't done so. Well, then, David, if you did not choose him as a successor, our lives are at risk. Because if he becomes the king, who's he going to come kill first? Solomon and his family, because Solomon is the legitimate successor. Okay, so they're fearing for their lives, and probably this is what motivated more David to protect Bathsheba and Solomon and them, because if Adonijah had gone become the king, then he was going to kill them. Okay, so we see this attitude of Adonijah, but then David takes action, and then he names Solomon as his descendant. Okay. And he makes him ride on his mule and sit on his throne, okay? And then the people were shouting and claiming Solomon as the successor of David, because David named him. And then we see that Adonijah had this feast where he was declared king, and then they heard this noise in the city. They said, what's going on? Why is the city in uproar? Well, the word comes to Adonijah that David had just named Solomon, brother of Adonijah, the king, legitimate king on Israel. So what happens? Adonijah flees, goes to the temple, and lays a hand on the horns of the altar, trying to protect himself. And then, I'm in verse 50, 1 Kings 1:50. Now Adonijah was afraid of Solomon, so he arose and went and took hold of the horns of the altar. Okay, he was trying to protect himself. So it was told to Solomon that Adonijah was getting a hold of the horns of the altar. So Adonijah made Solomon promise that he would not kill him. And Solomon said, verse 52, if he proves himself a worthy man, not one hair of himself shall fall on the earth. But if wickedness is found in him, he shall die. Notice, Solomon is being merciful in this case. Okay, I'm not going to kill you just because I want to kill you. If you're proving yourself to be a good man, I'm going to let you live. If you show yourself to be a wicked man, I'm going to kill you. If that's what you are. Okay, so he sent them home. Okay, so verse 53, so King Solomon sent them to bring them from the altar. And he came and fell down before the King Solomon. And Solomon said to him, go to your house. But the heart of King of Adonijah had not really changed. Okay, he still wanted to be the man in charge. He still thought himself that he deserved privileges. Okay, when he could have just said, well, that's it, I'm through. I'm thank you, God, for saving me. I was so close to being dead. I'm repented of exalting myself and thinking that I deserve to be king when the king is to be named. Okay, this wasn't a lesson learned. You see the importance of rebuking him, why the Bible mentions that his father never rebuked him. Okay? A permissive parenting style. Permissive. Parents who are permissive, we know they don't want to get in trouble. They our permissiveness is just to let them do. Okay, everything goes. Do whatever you want to do. That's fine. Your friends at school, they are doing whatever they want to do, and you want to do the same as them. Okay, that's fine. We'll let you do the same. Just be careful. That mom and dad, I want to do this and that. Okay, just be careful, and then everything goes. Okay, permissive parenting, not rebuking or not talking to them or having discipline at home. Okay, so why is this important? Because Adonijah comes back to Solomon and Bathsheba. He shouldn't be grateful he was left alive, but he comes back thinking he still deserves more things. And notice his attitude, notice his heart. Verse chapter 2, verse 15. Okay, and this is Adonijah talking to Bathsheba, and he's asking her to intercede for him. And then notice what he says. Then he said, "You know that the kingdom was mine." Look at this. See his attitude? He's saying, "You know, Bathsheba, you know the kingdom was mine. You and I know, we both know the kingdom was mine. And all Israel had set their expectations on me that I should reign." See, notice his heart. Okay, and Solomon promised, if you are a good man, you stay alive. If you are a wicked man, you will not stay alive. However, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. Makes me think, what is his definition of Lord? He might be just taking it, but the Lord gave it to him, or like something, one more God, or whatever. Okay, something very lightly. The word Lord here. But we see his attitude. And then notice again. Then he said, "Well, I have one petition. Please do not deny it to me." And then Bathsheba said, "Okay, let me know." And then verse 17, he said, "Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as his wife. He wanted the servant of David, this servant who was keeping David warm in his old age, he wanted for himself. Notice the reaction of Solomon. Solomon understood his heart. Verse 22. And King Solomon answered and said to his mother, verse 22. "Now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also. For he is my older brother. For him, for Abiathar the priest, and for Joab, the son of Zeruiah." Okay? Verse 23. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, "My God, do so to me and more also, if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life." Okay? Everything started with a father who did not rebuke his son. So we see the importance of rebuking. Okay? And then he lost his life because of his attitude. It was an untamed child. No one told him, "Hey, Adonijah, wait. Please come to your senses and realize who you are and where you belong, and just be happy with what you have. Be content. Enjoy what you have. Why do you desire more? Why do you think yourself worthy of more things?" But the point here is to rebuke. Okay. So we have two examples so far. I'm gonna keep moving because of time. Solomon, David, and Absalom, an uninvolved parent. Now David and Adonijah. And a permissive parent, okay? And by the way, I was listening to a lesson on YouTube from a brother. I don't know if he used to work for Apologetic Express or not. I don't think he did, but he's a common speaker, okay? And guess what he said because he was preaching on parenting. I said, I have to listen to this. So I listened to this today or yesterday, and he went ahead and said there's authoritative parenting and authoritarian parenting. Okay, and I said, well, I'm not that far off then. I'm okay in my classes. I'm not that far off. Okay, because he's an experienced man, and he said. I mean, not exactly what I said, but he mentions authoritative and authoritarian. I said, well, okay, that makes me feel good. Okay, I'm in a good track. So, and I'm going to mention something he said at the end before we finish on that topic. But the next example I want to bring to you is David and Solomon. And I'm going to make it brief because it's self-explanatory. First Kings chapter 11. And you know, again, children choose their own decision. They make their own decisions, okay? But examples from parents really drag us, okay? If we have good parents, they drag us in a good direction. If we have bad parents, we also have the temptation of being drawn to acting like they did, okay? So in a way, you remember King David had different wives, okay? He had multiple wives. And the most famous of was Bathsheba, of course. And then the daughter of King Saul was his first wife. But then look at Solomon, what happened to him. You know what happened to Solomon, okay? First King 11, chapter, verse 1. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughters of Pharaoh, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and the Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said for the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. And that's what happened with Solomon. He married women from these other nationalities who were idolaters. Sure enough, Solomon is pleasing them and worshiping the idols. So we see here that although Solomon made his own decisions, we see an element of a bad example in a way, okay? Now, I'm not saying everything is bad, but there's an element, okay, that drew Solomon to this type of behavior. Why do I say example drags? There's more examples in the Bible of parents, of children following the example of parents. Remember Isaac and Abraham? You know, when Abraham came to Abimelech, the king of Gerar, he was afraid for his wife, so he said, please, everywhere we go, you tell him that we're brothers and sisters. Brother and sister. Okay, that's what Abraham did. And Abimelech got upset. And then Isaac, same place, story. He also tell his wife, please tell him that we're brother and sister. Okay? So we see there's an element of an example that drags people. Remember, for instance, let's go real quick to 1 Kings chapter 22. I'm gonna make this the last verse because we're almost out of time. Notice in 1 Kings verse 22, we have King Ahab, one of the worst kings in Israel. Okay, and then we know the story of Ahab. He was evil, and his wife Jezebel was evil, and they were idolaters. They worshipped Baal and the gods of the land. But then notice, after Ahab died, in verse 51, notice what happened, what is told about his son who succeeds him. 1 Kings 22:51, Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, became king over Israel in Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 2 years over Israel. And notice this, verse 52. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. For he served Baal and worshipped him, and provoked the Lord God of Israel to anger. Where did he learn about Baal? Well, from dad, from mom. So he asked after the bad example of mom and dad. Okay, that's what happened with them. So what do we learn in this example that we mentioned? Okay, one, there is no one is exempt from issues and mistakes in the family. No one is exempt. Okay, we can make mistakes. But the important thing is, like Sister Evelyn mentioned, to do something to fix them. Okay, to realize them and do something to fix them. Also, parenting success involves both the parents and the children. It's a teamwork, okay? We cannot blame all the children or all the parents. It's a teamwork here, okay? Number 3, what else can we learn? Children tend to imitate the parents' behavior, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Children tend to imitate us, okay? Also, let's see. Sometimes parents may parent correctly, but yet children choose to disobey. Okay, that's also a fact. Okay, and then also parenting styles. We're talking about permissive, authoritative, or authoritative and authoritarian. Those styles can be passed on. And let me tell you this: sometimes if we are authoritarian, like a military school, sometimes our children tend to go the opposite way just because that treated me really strict. I want to be permissive. And some go the other way, swing the other way around, okay? Just because of our style of parenting. Sometimes we can be so permissive and then children grow up to say, no, I don't like to be too permissive like I grew up. I want to be real strong with my children, okay? So also, when we talk about poor parenting, it's always have to do with leaving God and His will from our lives, okay? If we include God and His will in our lives, we're not promised a perfect family, but we are on the right track of doing things good, doing things better, okay? Now, also very important, we're talking about kings. We're talking about wealth, okay? So status, wealth, or any other social standing doesn't guarantee good parenting, okay? It's not a guarantee. Just because I'm poor, I'm going to be a good parent. Just because I'm rich, I'm going to be a good parent. Everyone is the same, okay, in this case. And then we'll see some examples as Eli's children and Eli himself. God punishes those involved in poor parenting when they're sinning, okay? So we see these examples in the Bible. And then there's always freedom of choice, okay? We can strive to be the best parents we can be, but still there's freedom of choice at the end. So we need to think about that, okay? And lastly, successful parenting never must be taken for granted, okay? Because it's something that needs to be worked every day. Every day it takes work to be a good parent. We're not born we don't have a seal say, let's say you're a good parent. Were you born a good parent? You were born a bad parent. We need to strive, okay? And I know I'm speaking to experienced parents here, okay, probably more than I. But this example from the Bible just gives us lessons that we can think about, all right? I want to thank you for tonight, and thank you for your kind attention, okay?
Scattered. And in that model, I was coming. Good evening.
Good evening.
If you would please mark the Song of Invitation, song number 380. 380.